Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Before we begin today's shiur, it's essential to point out that we are in the middle of a discussion that we started not only in our previous shiur, but going back to Daf Lamed Beis as well. And so that in order to fully benefit from opening of today's shiur, it's truly essential to be familiar with the concepts that we have discussed till now. In our previous shiur, Daf Lamed Gimel, we saw a Mishnah on Lamed Gimel Amid Beis that spoke about two women who were married to two men, and as they were about to consummate their marriage, there was a switch, a mix-up, and the woman that was married by Mr. 1 ended up in intimacy with Mr. 2, and the woman assigned to Mr. 2 ended up in intimacy with Mr. 1. The Mishnah mentioned multiple averos upon that act of intimacy with the mixed up wives. On the side of the Gemara, there are no say topic heading. We've written chipus. We're going to be searching. Achar man tano de mishnosenu. Who would the author of our Mishnah be? De islay that holds from the concept of iser halal iser bekulan. Then in all the different possibilities of second prohibition violation being superimposed on a previous prohibition applies in all the different fashions or ways that could take place. Number one, be'isur moisif, be'koilel, u'bebas achas. Now these are terms that, for those who have been following the most recent shurim, are quite familiar with, and hence we're not going to spend time repeating what they are. But in the course of the Gemara, we will see through the Gemara and the Rashi how they are applied, even if you didn't learn the Daf until now, or maybe not lacking familiarity with them. Hopefully we'll still get a somewhat of an understanding of what these phrases mean. So we're looking for a Tana that holds. Let's now turn to the Gemara text itself at the top line. Uman Tana, Uman Hai Tana, who would the Tana of our Mishnah be? The Islay Isser Kolel, the Isser Moisef, the Isser Bas Achas. That all three different types of superimposing of subsequent offenses can take place upon original offenses. The Rashi at the top says, Uman Tano, Uman Hai Tano de Masnisin de Islay Isser Chalal Isser, who is the Tana of our Mishnah that holds a second Isser can be superimposed on a pre-existing Isser, Bain al yedei kolel, bain be iser moisev, bain al yedei basachas kagon elu shechayovim arba chatos. Like the example in our Mishnah, where you have each individual being chayov, being obligated to bring four sin offerings. Dikshekidesh Ruvain es rochel tchila. When Ruvain, and we have a little chart that accompanies this Rashi, so you see on the chart Ruvain and Shimon, and they are marrying Rochel and Leah. So when Ruvain married Rochel, Tchila Nesro al Shimon Mishum Eishes Ach. So at stage one, that bonding between Ruvain and Rochel creates a prohibition for Shimon in the form of Rochel is Eishes Ach, the wife of his brother. V'Eishes Ish. And with Ruvain's marriage to Rochel, she also becomes a married woman, so that Shimon, if he were to have intimacy at that point, at the point that Ruvain married Rochel, Shimon would be in violation of two offenses. Now, these two offenses are, as Rashi says, v'hainu basachas. These are simultaneous. V'komechayev leitana didana travayu. And our Tana says that he is guilty of both. Chozar Shimon v'kidesh Leah. Rashi goes on to describe stage 3. And that is where Shimon then marries Leah. Now we say stage 3, it really will, is it truthfully it's a reference to the second action after Reuven married Rachel. So now Shimon marries Leah. It's now the third offense, though, with Shimon's marriage to Leah. Migu da'asri le' hanoch kiddushin b'kulu shar achvasa mishum achos isha. Upon Shimon's marriage to Leah, now let's imagine before that. Let's say Rochel has a few sisters. One of them is Leah. She has other sisters, Dvorah and Sarah and Rivka and who knows, lots of other sisters. Before Shimon's marriage to Leah, Shimon could have married any of those other women, those other sisters. Once Shimon marries Leah, he can no longer marry those other sisters. Now what about Shimon and Rochel? Well, Shimon was already prohibited in marrying Rochel. This new event of the other sisters doesn't directly affect Rachel. Rachel is already forbidden to Shimon. However, the analysis of Iser Kolel suggests that through Shimon's marriage to Leah, now the other sisters become usher as Achos Isha, as Rashi says, they're usher Mishum Achos Isha. Asri Leinami Be'eshes Ochiv Mishum Achos Isha. The description of her being wife's sister is applicable to Rachel and halachically will be binding only because the other sisters now became usher. So the fact that the other sisters became usher, a new isser set in on an outside individual, the other sisters, that brings in Rachel as well, who was already usher. The afogav the asura ole v'kaimo, even though she, Rachel, was already asura to Shimon. V'hainu isur kola. What we just described, the second, the additional isur, namely achos isha being superimposed on Rachel, only because this isur of achos isha was realized upon others. That's the key to appreciating isur kolel. The new Iser setting in upon others and thereby enabling us to draw in Rachel as well. Vadayin, Rachel zu muteres Reuven by law. However, after all said and done, Rachel is allowed to be together with her own husband. Pirsa nida, once she starts the female monthly cycle, the menstrual flow, she becomes usher to her own husband. And we say, Migu disfasif Iser alo legabi by law, Mishum nida, since her husband becomes usher through this new problem, this new offense of nida. Isfasif nami bo, isfasif bo nami iser legabi Shimon. Now, when speaking about nida and focusing on Rachel, this is not a problem that affects some outside individual; it affects her directly. So, there's an additional layer of iser by the appearance of nidus upon Rachel herself. And this Hare Isser Moisef, this is a description of an Isser Moisef, where the new Isser is manifest on the original person themselves. The Gemara continues. Our question was raised, who is the Tana that holds Isser Chal Isser, a second Isser is superimposed on an original Isser, following all three different patterns, as we just described, Isser Koyvel, Isser Moisef, and Isser Basachas. The Gemara answers, and note that we have a Roman numeral number 1. This is going to be followed later in the middle of the page through a Roman numeral number 2, which will suggest a second approach to who is the author. So, number 1, Amar Vihuda, Amar Rav, Rebbe Meir, he. Our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe Meir. Desnan, Yesh oifel achilo achas, v'chayv aleha arba chatois v'oshem echad. There is a possibility of one consuming, one food consumption. In other words, he'll eat one olive quantity of food, and in that one olive quantity of food, he'll find himself guilty of four sin offerings and one osham guilt offering. What's the case? Tomei she'ochal chelev v'hu noiser minu mukdoshim b'yom ha-kippurim. A person was defiled, and he eats chelev from a sacrifice that was not offered on time. It's noser, it's leftover from, as we said, mukdoshim means something that was sanctified, sacrificial chelev. And he ate it on Yom Kippur. Rabbi Meir Omer, im hoysa Shabbos, v'hotzio b'fiv, chayav, if it happened to also be Shabbos and he carried it out in his mouth, it would also be chayav for a Shabbos violation. Omru lo, they responded to Rabbi Meir and said, eino min hashem, the issue of Shabbos is not relevant, because the issue of Shabbos is not a violation through eating, but it's a violation through the act of transferring the item from one locale to another. But as you can see, Rabbi Meir is adding to the previous list. The previous list, though, has in it, before you introduce the Shabbos factor, you've got four sin offerings and the need for bringing one Oshem guilt offering. The Rashi enumerates each one of these. The sin offering is generated by the fact that he's defiled, because one who eats sanctified or sacrificial meat in a state of bodily defilement, if done deliberately, he would be chayv kores, and in the event that it's done inadvertently, b'shogi, he brings a sin offering, a chatas. So that's one, because of the tumah. And there's a sin offering brought because he ate chelev, the same item that he ate in a state of tumah. The person was tomei, the item was chelev. Umishum nosar, nosar is a third guilt offering, is a third sin offering. Leftover sacrificial meat is not to be eaten, and he did. And eating on Yom Kippur also generates. That would be the fourth sin offering. Now the osham, the guilt offering that is brought, that's as a result of a non-kohen eating that which he should not have done. And that's called mi'ilah. It's a mi'ilah violation. And that warrants the bringing of a korban osham. The Gemara continues, V'Rabbi Meir, aliba demana. Rabbi Meir was, relatively speaking, a later Tanaic authority. The Gemara's question is, which earlier Tanaic source was his inspiration? So according to whom did Rabbi Meir say what he did? And Rashi adds the main feature, that when one is thinking that he's doing a mitzvah and it turns out to be a non-mitzvah, is one really guilty? Now concerning that topic, there is a machloikas tanoim. In this case, he thought he's doing a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to eat korbanos. And you see that he messed up. He was clearly wrong, but he had mitzvah intentions. So our question is, according to which authority on that matter did Rabbi Meir say his point? Gemara continues, E aliba de Rabbi Yeshua, if you think that he said his point according to Rabbi Yehoshua, you know, it's granted that we hold that Rabbi Meir holds Iser Chalal Iser, but he had kavona to do a mitzvah. By the way, we should not forget that we're dealing with the authorship of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah involved also an element of mitzvah. A person intended to marry a woman, so that in the course of doing a mitzvah, and it turns out that you stumbled, you sinned, even though your intentions were mitzvah oriented, you're still held accountable. So who holds like that? If it's according to Rabbi Yeshua HaOmar, but Rabbi Yeshua is known as saying Tov b'dvar mitzvah poter, that one who made a mistake in his attempt to fulfill a mitzvah is actually exempt. Elo aliba de Rabbi Eliezer. So it rather Rabbi Meir's stance that when one is attempting to do a mitzvah, he nevertheless is held accountable, is considered guilty if he sinned, that is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. And Rashi gives the background to that from Masechet Shabbos, but in order to reduce confusion and additional factors, we'll just leave them as names. But for the background, of course, take a look in the Rashi. So what have we said since the top of the Omid? We have said that our Mishnah is, which speaks about multiple offenses through all three different mechanisms, Iser Moisef, Iser Kolel, and Iser Basachas, our Mishnah would be authored by Rebbe Meir. Now, our Mishnah also described someone who was attempting to marry a woman, which is a mitzvah, and yet he's held accountable. This is in accordance with the earlier Tanaic authority, that of Rebbe Eliezer. So our Mishnah is Rebbe Meir, in accordance with Rebbe Eliezer. E boyesema, the oilam aliba Rebbe Yeshua. Instead of committing ourselves to, or limiting our authorship of the Mishnah to being within the confines of Rebbe Eliezer's opinion, another approach says our Mishnah can be understood even according to Rebbe Yeshua. Ki kom Rebbe Yeshua ta bedvar mitzvah poter, under what circumstances did Rebbe Yeshua say that a person who sinned in the course of trying to do a mitzvah that he's held as exempt? Hani mili gabi tinokos. This is with regard to the source material that Rashi featured that we did not explain till now, but there it involved a case of babies that were born, males, male babies that needed to have a bris milah, and there were two babies in front of the individual. One baby was born on a Shabbos, so his bris would be on Shabbos, and the other baby needed to have his bris milah, his circumcision, on Sunday. And he got confused, he forgot himself, and he ended up circumcising the Sunday baby prematurely on Shabbos. It's only on the seventh day. But now his intention was to do the mitzvah of circumcision. He ended up not doing the mitzvah because it was premature. Under those circumstances, Rebbe Yeshua in fact exempts. Why? Dizmanoi bohu. Because the nature of the mitzvah is one that is time-based. And he's confounded. Bohu means he's preoccupied. He's consumed by the time factor. And that's what caused his confusion. Because under the example we just gave you, one of those babies, in fact, was to be circumcised on Shabbos. Avol, hi, but in our Mishnah, where you're dealing with the issue of the mitzvah of marriage as opposed to circumcision, kevan de'ein zmano bohul, since there isn't an assigned time for marriage to take place. It doesn't have a fixed time. It's not like babies that the time for circumcision is fixed for their eighth day of life. Not so in the case of marriages. Lo, Rebbe Yeshua would not offer his exemption. In other words, if you're engaged in, you're engaged might be a poor choice of words, we're dealing because of the pun element to it, but if you're involved with trying to do a mitzvah that's not time bound and you end up sinning, you are held responsible. You should have been more careful, and you don't have the excuse that you're under the pressure of time. The Gemara asks, "V'harei truma de'ein zmano bo v'kopotar." We're going to see a source in which Rabbi Yeshua's name appears. If you skim ahead, you can see his name is dashed, underlined, and he says poter. He exempts in the case of a truma violation, where you don't have a zmano bohol element, and still you don't have a time consumption, time preoccupation factor, and yet he exempts. Disnan, the source tells us, hoyochel betruma venoda shuben grusho ben chalutz. A person was eating truma, and he discovers that who eats truma? A kohen eats truma. But a kohen, in order to eat truma, he has to be a legitimate or kosher kohen. If it turns out that his mother was a divorcee, in other words, that his father, who was a kohen, married a grusha, or his father married a woman that was that participated in chalitza, the shoe removal ceremony, that kind of child, though his father's a kohen, is usher in eating truma. So a person was eating truma, kohen, thought he was a kohen, he was eating truma, and it turns out that he's a ben grusha ben chalutza. Rabbi Lezer mechayev keren v'choymesh. Rabbi Lezer obligates him to pay the principal plus a fifth for Rabbi Yeshua poter, and Rabbi Yeshua exempts. So we have here achilas truma, which is a mitzvah, but you don't have a time factor. why then does Rabbi Yeshua exempt him? The Gemara answers, Ho itmar Allah, it was stated concerning this, Omar Rav Bevai Bar Abaye Hocha Betruma Be'erev HaPesach Haskinon Dizmana Bohul. There is a time pressure here. He's trying to eat the truma before. The truma is truma that is chometz, and chometz is usur in the at noontime of Erev Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. So he's eating truma, hopefully to avoid the need to burn it. We don't want you to burn truma. That's something that, generally speaking, is not desirable. So he he's under time pressure to finish the truma. And as a result of the time pressure, we can understand why Rabbi Yeshua says he's exempt. So with this, we're able to preserve the approach that we mentioned on the Bayes approach above, the Boisem Lolam Ali Rabbi Yeshua. And the rule of Rabbi Yeshua, that of Tor B'dvar Mitzvah, of making a mistake, of sinning in the course of trying to do a mitzvah, Rabbi Yeshua mentions there's exemption for that. That is not applicable to mitzvahs where you don't have a time pressure factor. So our Mishnah, which was a non-time pressure factor mitzvah, namely marriage, even Rabbi Yeshua can agree with the multiple sins that are featured. The Iboy Yesema, the Iser Basachas, Velibir Vishimon. A totally other approach is that our Mishnah, with its four averas, are averas that set in simultaneously. And even according to Rabbi Shimon, who is generally speaking a minimalist, as we've learned in our past couple of dapim, when it comes to mitzvahs that, or averas, sins that become applicable simultaneously, even Rabbi Shul will acknowledge multiple guilt. Now the Gemara analyzes this last answer. Are all four sins mentioned in the Mishnah simultaneous? Bishlamo kulu mishkachaslu. Regarding the Isurim in the Mishnah on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, most of the sins we can imagine simultaneously setting in. Deshavinu shliach v'shavu inu shaliach. The men, the two brothers who were marrying two sisters, the two brothers assigned an agent to deliver to the two women kesef kiddushin, the money through which they would be married. The shavu inu shlich means the two women, the two sisters that were being married, they appointed an emissary or an agent to receive on their behalf the money. The pogash shliach b'shliach. So, and the two emissaries met up with one another, two agents met up with one another, the agent carrying the money from the men, gave the money in one exchange to the agent appointed by the sisters to receive the money. So with that money exchange, the two sisters become at the same time three things. They become obviously married women, that's Eishes Ish. They become Achos Isha, the sister of one's wife, and Eshesach, one's brother's wife. So those three separate averas that with this instant, one-time, one-moment exchange of money from one agent to the other, from the men's agent to the women's agent, they become married with these three offenses becoming applicable simultaneously. Elo nidus hechi mishkachas. So the Mishnah made reference also to menstruation, to the nida offense. How does that figure in here? Omar of Amram, Omar Rav, b'shoifos mitoch yugimul liachar shloshosar lechuvi inu mitoch shneimosar liachar shneimosar lechuvi inhi. The women and men described are turning into adults as they, let's focus for a moment on the women. A woman becomes an adult and hence chayev and bound to mitzvahs and guilty of averos at age 12 and a day. So the women were prior to that, the fact that she's a nida. If she was having intimacy as a minor, she wouldn't be guilty of nidus. Likewise, the boys, the men in this case, the two brothers, they are turning to 13. You're dealing with two twin sisters and two twin brothers that are turning to 13 and a day at the same time that the girls are turning to 12 years and a day. In other words, very simply, the girls were born 1 year later to the day than the two boys. So prior to that particular moment, prior to the moment of their becoming adults, the setting of the sun ushering in the first day of that subsequent year, 12 years and a day, the first day of the 13th year for the women, or the first year of the 14th year for the fellows, 13 and a day is the first day. Prior to the sunset of that day, the girls started experiencing a nidah flow, the menstruant flow, so that they became nidos, and the men became guilty of a nidah violation at that very time, at that same moment that the shluchim were exchanging the funds. So as the agents were exchanging the funds, the women had become nidos, and only now does the fact that they're nidos have halachic ramifications. If we look at the Rashi in the wide lines, according to Rashi in the Dibur HaMaschil, Umitoch Yud Beis, Lacher Yud Beis, in the wide lines in the lower part of the page, he sets up this case where the agency was established right before they became adults. Tosfos has difficulty with this chap because minors cannot establish agency, shlichus. Nevertheless, following Rashi's approach, the agency was set up in order to take hold as soon as they became adult, so that all four offenses would set in simultaneously. We continue in the Gemara. V'ho ein isha misaberes. Oh, I should read the Dibur HaMaschil of the Gemara. Mafrishin oison. We separate in the case of the mix-up of the husbands with the wives. We separate the couples and do not allow the woman to return to her actual husband until the passage of 3 months. The Gemara asks, why is there any necessity of separating the woman from her own husband? Va'ein isha misaberes b'bi'a rishona. A woman does not conceive through the first act of intimacy. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo bar Avua, Shebualu v'shanu. The case of the Mishnah is that they had two acts of intimacy. There was the initial act of intimacy, that true, it does not result in impregnation, but the second act of intimacy could. And because of that, we separate them. The Gra, you can see, does not gores the next couple of lines, and that's why he doesn't have in his version the next couple of lines, and therefore we have brackets around them. We pick up with the bottom line. Omar le Rava the Rav Nachman. Rava asks on that which Rav Nachman just gave an answer of Baalu Vishanu as a result of Ein Isha Misaberes B'Bi'a Rishona. So Rava asks Rav Nachman, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, V'ha Tamar B'Bi'a Rishona Yabra. Tamar had intimacy with her father-in-law, and we see that she became pregnant from the initial and only act of intimacy that they had together. Amale Tamar Be'etzba Mo'acha. Tamar, before the intimacy with Yehuda, she had inserted her finger into that particular part of her anatomy, breaking the basulum, the membrane of skin that seals up the area of that particular area of the anatomy internally, and opening, causing it to be open by breaking that membrane, and hence, as a result of that, the intimacy, Bia Rishona, the first act of intimacy, could in fact result in impregnation. So that Tomar is different. Basically, a man that has intimacy with a virgin woman, that first act will not result in impregnation. With regard to Tomar, her finger action did the equivalent of what a Bia Rishona would do, and hence it was like a Bia Shnia. So she created the opening with her finger, so that their first act of intimacy would be like the standard case of two acts. So this is Rav Nachman's way of preserving his original answer. The Gemara continues, the Omar Rabbi Yitzchok kol moyachos shel beis Rebbe Tomar Shmon. From the family of Rebbe, of Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, girls that got married, they would do this. They would, at least some of the girls would, mo'achos, they would break that membrane, create the opening, and they were called, by name, they were called Tomar. V'lomo nikro shmon Tomar. Why were they called Tomar? Al shem Tomar shmo'acho be'etzba'o. In commemoration of the original Tomar who did that. V'ho havu er v'oinon. Why do you say that Tomar, in her relations with Yehuda, needed to, or felt any need to create the opening artificially when it was with her finger? Was she not married already to the sons of Yehuda, Er V'Oinon, by name? So she was already a woman who experienced intimacy. Why should she have any need for being Mo'acho Be'etzba? The Gemara answers, Er V'Oinon, Shimshu Shelo Kedarkon. The intimacy that she, Tomar, had with Yehuda's sons, Er V'Oinon, was an intimacy that was called Shelo Kedarkon, in the unusual fashion, in the non-ordinary way of intercourse. And hence, they came upon her, we'll say, in the backwards fashion, and not through a normal penetration. And therefore, she remained a virgin, biologically or physiologically a virgin, even though she had been married to Er V'Onan. They never had normal intimacy. Meisve, the Gemara asks, Kol Esrim V'Arba Chodesh. For the first 24 months after a woman bears a child, she's nursing the child. Now, and she's also married to her husband. If this woman who's nursing her infant would become pregnant during the course of her nursing, the milk supply would cease, and that would endanger the child. So halacha has a special provision for how a man is to live as husband and wife with his nursing wife. So the source tells us, Dosh mibefnim vizore mibachutz. There's a physical insertion. However, when it comes to the male release, he does that externally, so as to make sure that she does not become pregnant. Divrei Rebbe Eliezer. That's Rebbe Eliezer's approach. Now, we dashed underlined Dosh mibefnim. That means a normal, regular male insertion. So they said to Rabbi Eliezer, Omru Lei, they said to Rabbi Eliezer, Halalu Eino Elok Kamaisa Er V'Onan. What you're suggesting is nothing more than the actions of the, and I dare say the reprehensible actions of Er V'Onan. So they seem to object to what Rabbi Eliezer is suggesting. But for our purposes, what we have done with our markings, we've dashed on the line the main words. Dosh mi bifnim, that means insertion. And that's what Erva Onan did. So how can you say above that Erva Onan were Shimshu Shalo Kedarkon, which, as we described before, was the unusual way coming together, where here this Tanaic source says that Erva Onan were described as regular male insertion, which would have, again, broken open her anatomy, not requiring tomar to be mocha be'etzba. The Gemara says, kemaisa erva onan velo kemaisa erva onan. When this source makes reference to erva onan, it's referring to an aspect of erva onan's behavior, but not as if this suggestion is completely like erva onan. Kemaisa erva onan dichti v'hoya imbo el eshes ochiv v'shiches artsa. What characterized Erva Onan is that they released their male seed, they released it outside of their, in this case, outside of Tamar. So they were called, they were Mashkis Zera, they destroyed their seed. However, Velo Kemaisa Erva Onan, what this source describes is unlike Erva Onan in the following, De'ilu Hasam Shalo Kedarka. With regard to Erva Onan, their entire method of mating with her was in the, we'll call it the backwards fashion, whereby there was no penetration to begin with. That's what Shalo Kedarka means. V'hocha, with regard to the nursing woman, Kedarka, there is penetration, with the difference being, there's after the penetration, the actual male release is done outside of her. But as we want to emphasize here, Erva Onan would not have made Tamar a Be'ula. And when she met Yehuda, her father-in-law, when she met him, it was in effect her first experience of normal intercourse. Now, we mentioned that Erva Onan were practitioners of Bia Shalo Kedarka. Bishlama Oinon, we're highlighting this with a double underline because this is you'll see the question is repeated from different angles. Bishlama Oinon, I understand Onan was Mashchis Zaro, Dichtiv Bey, it says regarding Onan, Veshiches Arza. Onan was the second of the husbands, the second son of Yehuda, to marry Tamar. So by Onan, the pasuk says Veshiches Arza, that he was Mashchis Zaro. He released his seed outside of her. Ela Er Menolan. Where do we see that to be with regard to Er? The Gemara just before said that Er and Onan were guilty of that, of destroying their seed. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Dichtiv, the pasuk says Vayomos Gam Oisoi, that he also died, that Onan also died, which means that he is being compared to Er, which tells us that Afhu Oiso Miso Mes, that namely that Onan, who we know was Mashvizaro, and his behavior was like that also of Er, so I can see that Er was guilty of that action of being Mashchis Zaro, and that results in their death. Bishlama Oinon, now further question regarding Onon, we can understand, we can't legitimatize or justify it, but we can understand his behavior. Bishlama Oinon, Onon was in effect what we call a Yavam. His brother Er had been married to Tamar, it's the name of our Masichta, and they didn't have children. And upon the brother's death, Onan, the surviving brother, is expected to marry the wife, the widow. And in doing so, the child that is born is then associated, literally is called by the name of his deceased father, but he's associated with his father and not with the new husband, with the Yavam. So, Bishlama Oinon Mishum Lo Yehazera, unto him the child will not be considered. The idea being is that the child is called according to his mother's first husband. So Onan was not interested in her being impregnated and bearing a child that wouldn't be associated with him as the father. Elo Er, my time of an ochi. What about Er? He was the first husband. Why did he behave this way? Why was he so resistant to her becoming pregnant and bearing a child? Answer, Kidei Shalotis Aber Viakish Yofyo. He was of the opinion that if she becomes pregnant, so she will, her beauty will be diminished. That's Yakish Yofyo, and he didn't want that to take place. So he did what he did, as we described above. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. Machloikis Tanoim I Kala Potter Mitvila Avur Bia Rishana. We'll see a Machloikis Tanoim, if a newly wed woman, after the first act of intimacy, is she exempt from immersion in a mikveh? Before we continue, there is a pasuk from Vayikra Perk Tezvah Posuk Yudches. It says as follows: V'isha asher yishkav ish oisa shichva zera, a woman who is engaged in intimacy and receives the male seed. V'rochatsu b'mayim v'tom'u ad harav, the man and the woman are become considered tomei, and they, as a result of that, they immerse in the mikvah. They're in a state of tumah until sunset. In the pasuk, it said, "Ish asher v'isha asher yishkav ish osa." The word "osa" is a limitation expression. So, Tanu Rabbanan, "osa prat lekala," to the exclusion of a kala. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is referring to a kala. That's a woman upon her first act of intimacy with her husband. So she does not require Tuma. So Bio Rishona does not generate the need for immersion. The Chachamim Omrim Prat Lishalo Kedarka. The Chachamim say this is to the exclusion of a woman who was Niveles in the unusual, in the backward fashion. Omar Le Hoin Brei de Rav Nachman Le Rav Nachman. The first word in the line, Hoin, is a name. It's Rav Nachman's son. Rav Nachman called his son Hon. And he said to his father, Rav Nachman, Lema Kosova Rabbi Yehuda, should we say that Rabbi Yehuda, who exempts the bride, the newlywed, the bride from immersion, that what is motive, according that the name was according to Rabbi Yehuda, that exempts the bride, the Torah's consideration is HaTorah Chosa Al Tachshite Kala. The Torah was compassionate in preserving the cosmetics that are worn by the bride. In other words, the bride invested a lot of money and time and effort in beautification, and immersion in a pool of water, in a mikveh pool of water, will ruin all of her cosmetics. So that it seems that should we say that Rabbi Yehuda, who mentions that she's exempt based on the pasuk, is because the Torah has compassion and concern for preserving her cosmetics. Omar Lay, Rav Nachman responds. He says that that's not the reason for the exemption, but rather lefi she'ein isha misaberes mibia rishona. A woman does not become impregnated through the first act of intimacy. So that the bio rishona that the Torah is exempting, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is simply because it's an intimacy that doesn't result in offspring, in seed, and in her bearing children. So if you go back to the pasuk said v'isha, that's quoted on the side of our Gemara, v'isha asher yishkav ish oisa shichva zera. It's the immersion in the mikveh is referring to a case of a mating which would result in seed, but the first mating doesn't result in zera, doesn't result in offsprings. Therefore, no need for immersion. Now we have in the Tanakh source that we learned, we saw Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama. What are they arguing about? In other words, the Tanakhama does not exempt the Kala from immersion in the mikveh, let's see how the Gemara analyzes their machlokas. B'mayakomithli, Rabbanan Savri, Shichvas Zera, the term Shichvas Zera in the Pasuk, Prat Le-He-A-Ro-A. Ha-Ro is a non-complete form of a male organ entrance into the woman, which for our purposes means he doesn't release seed. It's a partial entrance without any seed, without any semen release. So the expression of the pasuk shichva zera tells us that a man who had that type of relation with the woman, so there's no immersion. And osa, that word prat l'shelo kedarka, that is coming to exclude the backwards type of intimacy. Rebuta Savar, Shelo Kedarka Vihara Mishikhva Zera Nafka. Rebuta says that both of these, he agrees that they are exempt from immersion, but they're both learned from the same phrase, Shikhva Zera. Both Shelo Kedarka and Hara do not result in offspring. Therefore, that frees up the word osa prat lekala. That is available to exclude an additional example, namely the kala, the bride. The bia rishona of the bride is an act of intimacy that does not necessitate purification in the mikveh. On the side of the Gemara, under the nosei, the topic heading, We have written Almona Shishasa Achar Mises Bailo Eser Shonim, a widow that waits 10 years after her husband's death, Venises, and then marries, she remarries, Shuv Eino Yoledes, she will not bear children anymore. In other words, waiting 10 years as a widow and then remarrying will result in her non child bearing, if she would have remarried within 10 years, so she would be capable of bearing children. Not so if she waits 10 years. Ki also Ravin. Amar Rav Yochanan, we're in the Gemara. Ravin quotes Rav Yochanan, Kol sheshos achar baylo eser shanim, a woman who waits after the death of her husband 10 years, v'niseis, and then remarries, shuv eino yoledes, she will not bear children anymore. Amar Rav Nachman, lo shanu elo she'ein daito linosei. This teaching is limited to a woman who had no intentions of remarrying. Avodait linose misaberes. But if in the course of, after she became a widow, she had in mind to remarry, the fact that 10 years go by will not inhibit her ability to bear children. Omar le Rava, Labas Rav Chista. Rava says to his wife happened to be the daughter of Rav Chista. The daughter of Rav Chista had been married previously to another man. There's Rashi mentions some additional background to this. She had been married to Romi Bar Chamo, and she had been a widow for 10 years and married Rava and bore children. So this causes a little bit of eyebrow raising, and so Rava says to his wife, "Komeranini Rabbanan Abasrech, you waited 10 years after your first husband, and then we married and we had children. How could that be? Unless maybe she was engaged in some other intimacy activity in the interim, but." That's causing them to raise some concern about her fidelity. Omro le ano datoi alo chavoi. She says, "No, I in fact was a widow for 10 years, but all that time my mind was on you, on marrying you." There's a comment in the Tosfos, the end of the narrow lines, datoi alo chavoi. Omro Rabbeinu Tam mishum ahi uvda perakam bova basra. This Gemara is a reflection of an incident reported in the first parak of Bava Basra The Omra Bas Rav Chisda, the daughter of Rav Chisda, said to her father after Rav Chisda asks her, which of these two men, Rami Bar Chama and Rava, do you want to marry? And she says, Travayu Kaboino, I want both. Now, we know that a woman cannot be married simultaneously to two men. So she married Rami Bar Chama first, and he died. She knew that she had said she wanted both, and she was looking forward to the fulfillment of her prophecy. However, in the meantime, Rava had been married to another woman, and even though, technically speaking, bigamy in the time of the Gemara was accepted, people didn't engage in that, it seems, and Rava had another wife, and therefore there was a delay in Rava's marrying the Bas Rav Chisda. Even though Rava was married to another woman, she had in mind that one day she would be married to Rava. So comment made above about 10 years before remarrying and not having children, as was qualified by Rav Nachman for, remains true. That is true only if she doesn't have in mind to remarry. But in the case of Bas Rav Chisda, she had in mind all those years to marry Rava. The Gemara continues, Hahi Gasya Lekamei de Rav Yosef. It was a woman that came to Rav Yosef, Omra Lo, and she said to Rav Yosef, Rebbe, Anoshu Hisi Achar Bali Eser Shana Vialadati. She seemed to be bragging that she waited 10 years before remarrying, and she did bear children. In other words, she's trying to say the rabbis are wrong. Omar law. So Rav Yosef says to her, Biti, al totzi las al divrei chachomim. Says, don't cast aspersions regarding the words of the sages. If they said 10 years of widowhood will be responsible for non-further childbearing, that is to be accepted. What are you trying to accomplish? Omra le, so she revealed, Lenochri nivalti. I had intimacy with a non-Jew in the interim. And so that, as I said, that would basically restart the clock. Or she, in fact, whatever, she had intimacy and maybe even had a child from that, but whatever the case is, it wasn't a case of 10 years of non-intimacy in a state of widowhood that really was the case with this woman. The Mivneh note on the side, the structural note, features a diamond, and the diamond is here to highlight Shnei Lishonos B'Shmuel. So you see, Shmuel is noted with a diamond, and it's called Aleph, and in the upper part of Lamed Hei Omed Aleph, you see a second appearance of Shmuel with a base. The Nosei, the topic, Chiyuv Hamtono Gimul Chadoshim Lenoshim, the need of waiting 3 months for women, acharei shenivalu, after they experienced intimacy, kolel ketana bas Yisrael, that includes a minor who happens to be Jewish, afagav delo bas bonim, even though she is not capable of bearing children, she's too young. And the consideration of establishing her pregnancy as being from the first husband or the second husband is of no relevance when you're dealing with a minor who is happened to be with one man, and then the question is, can she go to the second man? There shouldn't be a need for waiting 3 months in the case of the minor. But nevertheless, the rabbis imposed a rule concerning her so as not to confuse the situation with an adult woman, meaning over 12 years of age, where intimacy in her case could result in pregnancy, and hence the need for establishing who the father is. The Gemara. Omar Shmuel, Vekulon, all women that were participant in intimacy, Tzrichas Lahamtin Shloisha Chadoshim, they have to wait 3 months before we would allow them to marry a man. Chutz migiyuros u'mishuchares ktana, with the exception of a convert or freed bondmaid that happens to be a minor. Avo ktana bas Yisrael tzricho lahamtin gimul chadoshim. However, with regard to a minor Jewish girl who experienced intimacy, we will not allow her to marry until the passage of 3 months. And as we said before, the general need for waiting 3 months is to establish who is the father. Is it the person who had initial intimacy with her? Or, if 3 months pass and we see no sign of pregnancy, then we allow her to marry, and any birth subsequent to that would be associated with the second man, her husband. There's the house marking that you see here is in order to highlight the distinction, the difference between these two versions of Shmuel. So notice the house here emphasizes the expression tzricha. She needs, the minor Jewish girl needs the 3 month waiting period. But if you look at the next house marking, the upper part of Lamed Hamad Aleph, there it says eino tzricha. The very same case of the minor Bas Yisrael does not need to wait 3 months. So the difference is very clear between these two versions. So we continue in the Gemara. Uvimai. The girl that we're talking about that needs to wait 3 months. What was the association? Or if we look in Rashi, Uvemai nafka mibaylo kama, her departure from her first husband, through what mechanism was it? And again, we're focusing on the ktana. How did she leave the first husband that we're now insisting on her waiting 3 months? The double underlining highlights the different possibilities. E b'miun, if it's through miun miun, we've mentioned this often in the past, this is a case of a minor who was married through a rabbinic power, through either her mother or brother handing her over to marriage, while a minor, her father is, let's say, dead. There are other examples, other possibilities, but that is sufficient for now. Her father's out of the picture, and her mother or brother hand her over in marriage. That marriage that they are responsible for, involving the minor, is a rabbinic type marriage, and that can be undone by her refusing to continue with them as she approaches her becoming a gedola. Prior to her becoming a gedola, or at the point she becomes a gedola, she said, "I don't want to continue living with him." That's miun, and that undoes the marriage. There's no need for a divorce document. Once again, because it's a rabbinic type marriage. So if her departure from the first husband was through miun, the Omar Shmuel says later on, the lo baya, there is no need for waiting 3 months. A girl, a minor who is married rabbinically and leaves the first husband through miun, she doesn't have to wait 3 months before marrying a second husband. The e beget, and if her departure from the first husband was through a divorce document, through a formal divorce, Ha'omro Shmuel Chada Zimna. Shmuel already said regarding this elsewhere that there is a need to wait. The Omar Shmuel, skip the brackets for a moment, Nosan lo get Tzricho Lahamtin Shlisha Chadoshim. If the husband gave the minor a divorce document, she does have to wait 3 months. We skipped the bracketed section because that's not directly relevant to the point we're trying to make. Let's read the line again. Yomar Shmuel, Miyano Bo, Einot Tzricho Lahamtin Shlosh Chadoshim. If the minor leaves her husband through miun, reflecting a rabbinic marriage, no need for her to wait 3 months. However, no son law get, if it was a formal Torah marriage where the husband divorced the minor because she had been married to him through her father marrying her off, so then she needs to wait 3 months. So why would Shmuel have to say that point over here when he has said that elsewhere? Elo biznus. We're talking about a woman who had not been married. This minor experienced znus. She experienced simple act of immorality. Znus is intimacy outside the realm of marriage. So she wasn't married. She simply was a young girl, a Ktana Bas Yisrael, that was niveles through znus, through this kind of intimacy. And the Gemara continues at the top of Lamed Hamad Aleph, the Gozu Rabbonan Ktano Mishum Gedolim. The Rabbonan insisted on her waiting 3 months so as not to create confusion with the case of a Gedola, an adult Jewish girl that in fact experienced an act of intimacy, where an adult a Jewish girl experiences an act of intimacy, even if it happens to be through znus. There is the fear or the problem, the possibility of her having become impregnated through that. And before we can allow her to marry another man, she'll have to wait 3 months in order to establish who the father is, if she was pregnant from that act of intimacy or not. So as a result of the need in the case of a gedola, the Rabbonin imposed a similar requirement with regard to a ktana that experienced znus. The Gemara continues, Umi gazrina ketana mishum gedola. Do we in fact impose such additional restrictions imposed upon a ktana because of the case of a gedola, because of the case of an adult? V'ha tnan, our Mishnah describes the case of the switched around women. And it says in our Mishnah, im hoyu ktanois she'eno ruyos lele machzirin oison miyad, that if they were minors, they would be returned to their proper husbands immediately without any waiting. Omar Rav Gidol, Omar Rav, hoyruas shaw hoysa. The incident referred to in our Mishnah was a contingency, which means in general we do require the delay period of 3 months for a minor in anticipation of the case of the adult. However, the incident reported in the Mishnah was an unusual event. It was a contingency, and therefore the rabbinic insistence or the gezerah was not imposed. The Gemara asks, "Michlal d'havoi, are you inferring that there was such an event that actually took place?" The Mishnah didn't use the word "maise hoya." Maise means an incident that took place. It doesn't say that in the Mishnah. Elo kehoruas shah hoysa, v'chiluf lo shachiach. Horas Shah means, as we said before, a momentary ruling, a contingency ruling. And the reason for that, a gezerah, the reason that the gezerah, the rabbinic requirement of waiting, was not imposed is because shchiluf lo shchiach, switching around of wives, is a very unusual event where two wives get switched around to someone other than their husband. Since it's an unusual case, we have a general principle that milsa de lo shchicha lo gozu be'rabbanan. Unusual events are not our reason, or are not reason for the rabbanan imposing their rulings. So that we're sticking with the approach till now, namely that of Shmuel, that a ktana bas Yisrael, after experiencing znus, would have to wait 3 months before we would let her marry to ascertain whether she became pregnant from that act of intimacy. Lishno Achrino, Amri Lo, another version. Omar Shmuel, Kulon Tsrichos Lahamtin Shlish Chadoshim, all adult women that experienced intimacy have to wait 3 months before marrying a second man, Chutz Migiyoras Umishuchreres Gedola, with the exception of a convert or freed bondmaid adult, adult convert or freed bondmaid. Avoktano Bas Yisrael, a minor, a Jewish minor girl that happened to have intimacy, Eino Tzricho Lahamtin Gimel Chadashim, she does not have to wait 3 months. Now, as we go through this second version of Shmuel, now we inserted between the lines based on the Rashi that Shmuel says that all have to wait 3 months. That means all adult women, all adult Jewish women have to wait 3 months after experiencing an act of intimacy, after having been married to one man or whatever, or having experienced intimacy in some other context. Before we allow her to marry another man, she has to wait 3 months in order to establish whether she became pregnant from that initial act of intimacy. As an exception, when to the adult women that we mentioned, a convert or a freed bondmaid, there is no waiting. Avol, Tano Bas Yisrael, Eino Tzrichamtin Gimel Chadoshim. And we emphasize here the house marking. Once again, here's where this version of Shmuel is different than the first version. Bimai. Well, as far as the Ketana Bas Yisrael, what are the circumstances that are described? Ibimiyun, if she left her first husband through miyun, and you're telling me she doesn't have to wait 3 months before marrying a second man, Ha'omro Shmuel Chadazim, Shmuel has already said this point. Why does he have to repeat it over here? We saw this this quote at the bottom of Lamed Alu Mebeis, where Shmuel said that, in fact, there in our Gemara we had that phrase in brackets. E beget, if it's a woman, a minor, who was totally married and was divorced through a get, Ha'omar Shmuel Debaya, Shmuel said that such a case necessitates a waiting period. Yomar Shmuel, Mianabo, Eino Tzricho Lahamtin Shlish Chadoshim, Nosan Lo Get, Tzricho Lahamtin Shlish Chadoshim. The 2 points we just mentioned, you see here, Shmuel having already said that. They having already said in the case of Miun, she doesn't need to wait, and if her departure from the first husband was through Get, then she does need to wait. So that couldn't be what Shmuel is talking about here, where we have in the house marking that she does not need to wait. Elo biznus uznus biktano lo shechiach. Rather, what Shmuel is referring to when he talks about the Ketana Bas Yisrael does not have to wait is because she was involved with a mere act of immorality not in the context of her being married as a single girl, a minor. She engaged in this fling, if you will, and that's unusual. Znus with a Ketana is something unusual, and therefore they do not impose the ruling of the need for waiting 3 months. As we indicated earlier, unusual circumstances are not cases where the rabbis would intervene with gzeiros, with additional rulings and stringencies. The Gemara asks, and note that we have an arrow here, you can align it with the arrow above, Giyores umeshuchreres deshchiach beuznus likzar. If the non-waiting is a function of something that's unusual, when you're dealing with a convert or a freed bondmaid, it's not unusual for them to have been engaged in immoral relations, in flings. So why above do you say that the giyores and meshuchreres gedolah do not have to wait? The Gemara answers, who de Amar Krab Yossi? Shmuel, who said above that they do not have to wait is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. Tesani Hagiros Veshuyah Veshivchos Shenivduv Shenizgai Veshenishtachru. A converted woman, or a captive woman, or a bondmaid that experienced redemption, or conversion, or freedom from being a bondmaid. Tzrichos Hamtin Gimul Chadoshim Divrei Bihuda. This is the opinion that we're not emphasizing. He says they have to wait. Rabbi Yossi Matir Le'ores V'Nosei Miyad. Rabbi Yossi allows Erusin and Nisuin immediately. No waiting. Omar Rabba, my time with Rabbi Yossi. Why is Rabbi Yossi so liberal? He's so free, so unrestrictive. Is there not a concern that maybe the woman who is now converted or now a freed bondmaid, she's going to marry a Jewish man, is she not possibly pregnant from a non-Jewish man from before? Why after she converts, she can marry immediately? Is it not possible that just before that she had intimacy, and as the Gemara was suggested before, znus, intimate relations is common with regard to these types of women? So why is Rabbi Yossi so free? Is he not concerned that maybe she became pregnant? Kosovar, Rabbi Yossi holds, Isha Mizana Mishameshes B'moich Kedei Shelot Esaber. A woman who engages in free sexual relations, in znus, she also carries with her a moch. Moch is a form of contraception. It's a piece of absorbent material that a woman would insert in that part of her anatomy that would absorb any male seed, and therefore she will not become pregnant, so that there is nothing to fear. True, I acknowledge, says Rabbi Yossi, that they engage in znus, but there is no fear of her becoming pregnant. Omar le Abaye. Abaye looks at Rabbi Yossi's, at the Rabba's answer, and he says, Bishlamog Yores, I can understand that there will be a moch in the case of a woman planning to convert, who converts. Kevin the Dait of the Yuri, since she has in mind to convert, Mintura Nafsha, she will be careful, she'll watch herself, and she'll certainly, before her conversion, she'll be using this contraception. Kedei Lahavchin Bein Zera, Shenizra B'Kedusha Bein Zera, Shenizra Shelo B'Kedusha, in order to distinguish between a child that is conceived in holiness as opposed to one conceived not in holiness. So that she, it's of concern to her that she's able to determine that whether or not she became impregnated before her conversion or not, which in other words means that since she's planning to enter Kedusha, the sanctity of Klal Yisrael, of Judaism, she will take preemptive measures preventing pregnancy. That's clear, that's understandable. Shvuya v'shivcha nami, the case of the captive woman and the bondmaid, as far as they're taking preemptive measures, preventative measures, that too can be understood. The Shami Mimrayu, they heard from their masters, either their captors or their owners, that they were planning to release them. Umintari Nafshayu, and they would also guard themselves that if they were subject to znus, they would have taken preventative measures and not become pregnant. So far, all those cases are understandable. Ela, however, when it comes to a shivcha, there is there are different methods of her being released. One of them is the planned release, as we just described, that the master was heard planning to release her. Ela yoytzis b'shein v'ayin hechi mishkachas lo. There's another form of a shivcha shenifdes, of becoming released, and that's if she was hit, knocking out a tooth or an eye, one of the different limbs, Rosh Evarim it's called, are knocked out. What happens then if she is hit by her master and one of these limbs are injured or afflicted, she goes free instantly. He wasn't planning, she didn't know, she had no way of knowing, and yet and yet it was said above that the mishuchreres, the free bondmaid, even though znus is common, she does not have to wait. V'chitema called the memela moider Rabbi Yossi. You might say that when things are in fact memela, they're not planned, they happen on their own, they happen instantly, Rabbi Yossi will concede that there is the need for waiting. That's not true. V'hatanan anusa umefuta tzricha lahamtin gimel chadoshim v'Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi mati le'oreis v'nosim miyad. And now anusa umefuta, anusa is a raped woman, mefuta is a seduced woman. The Rabbi Yossi says they can marry immediately. There was nothing planned over there. So how can Rabbi Yossi allow this? Here's a woman that clearly could be suspected of having been impregnated. Why is there no waiting period before she marries her husband? Elo Omar Abaye. Isha Mezana, a woman who is engaged in, we'll say, non-marital intimacy, znus. This type of intimacy with regard to women, she doesn't want to become pregnant. In other words, no woman wants to become pregnant from acts of znus, from, we'll say, extramarital or non-marital intimacy. And as a result of that, Ms. Hapeches Shelotis Aber, she does a type of body twist. In simple terms, a woman could stand up immediately after being subject to this kind of intimacy. So that even a woman who is Yotze B'Shein V'Ayin, in other words, a moment before she was a regular bondmaid, and as such she engaged in, she was a party to immoral relations. And true, she is released instantly through Shein V'Ayin. But nevertheless, that very act of intimacy under Znus circumstances will cause her, will motivate her to mishapekas, to flip around, preventing conception from taking place. The idach, Rabbi Yehuda, who is in fact restrictive. Why is he restrictive? Why does he say that in these non-marital type relations, a woman nevertheless does have to wait? Is it not so that women who are involved in znus relations don't want to become pregnant? So he says that's all true, but chayshinon shemalon is hapchi yofi yofi. We concern ourselves, we consider, we suspect maybe she didn't do so effectively with enough force to release from her body the semen, and hence she might still in fact become pregnant. So we want her to wait before marrying. V'im hoyu kohanos, the Mishnah said, nifsalu min hatruma. The Mishnah spoke about the mix-up of women, and if they're kohanos, they become unfit for consuming truma. The Gemara is, first of all, a woman whose father is a kohen is entitled to eat truma. Certainly as a single woman, she's entitled to eat truma. If she marries a kohen, she continues to eat truma. Now, the Mishnah said that if she's a kohenes and she ended up having intimacy with someone other than her husband, so she's nifsala, she becomes unfit for truma eating. The Gemara asks, kohenes in Yisrael, as though the term kohenes in the Mishnah implies the daughter of a kohen. So only if it's the daughter of a kohen would she become unfit for truma consumption. If she was something else, she was not the daughter of a kohen, she would not be affected. Well, that's not true. Let's take a look at Rashi. We have Rashi noted with a star in the middle of the page. Yisraelis lo bitmiyo, hoyel v'eishes kohenhi. If a woman whose father is a Yisrael and she happened to marry a kohen, as such she's entitled to eat truma because she's married to a kohen. If she got switched around, how is it that you're implying that she would still be able to eat truma? That's simply not true. As Rashi says, since she's the wife of a kohen, afilu bas Yisrael nami asura l'bay lo kohen, she is prohibited to go back to her husband who is a kohen. And if she's prohibited to go back to her husband the kohen, she can't eat truma. So what does the Mishnah mean when it says that if they were kohanos, they become unfit for truma as a result of their switch around? The Gemara answers, and here we have the triangle and another one out later. On the side, under the Nosei Mivneh, we indicate, these are nisyonos lahasbira Mishnah. These are attempts to explain the Mishnah that said, v'im hoyu kohanos nifslu mina truma. Kohanos mashma benois kohanim dafka. V'ze lo yeh miduyuk loma kipshat b'mishnah. The word kohanos in and of itself implies only daughters of a kohen, but that is simply inaccurate. So what are we to make of this? The Gemara continues, Emo im hoyu nishay kohanim. If they were married to kohanim, we know that the wife of a kohen who is raped, or is even if she's raped. In this case, we're talking about a switch around. She becomes unfit to her husband, the Kohen. So the term Kohanos means women married to Kohanim. And if something like is described in the Mishnah takes place, they become unfit for, certainly continue with their husbands, and unfit for Truma. The Gemara asks, the question here lasts a number of lines. Nishay Kohanim in Nishay Yisraelim lo. Are you suggesting in the Mishnah that only women married to Kohanim, after having been engaged as married women in immorality, in illicit intimacy, only women married to Kohanim become restricted from Truma and not other women, not women married to Yisraelim? The Omar of Amram, Ha Milso Amar Lon Rav Sheshes. Rav Amram says that the following was told to us by Rav Sheshes, V'an harinu le'ainin mimasnisin, and he literally enlightened our eyes from the Mishnah. What does Rav Sheshes say? Rav Sheshes says, Eshes Yisrael shenensa, the wife of a Yisrael, of a non-Kohen, that was raped, afopi shemuteres le'bailo, even though by letter of the law, she is allowed to go back to her husband. This is in contrast to a woman married to a Kohen that was raped, is not allowed to go back to her husband, the wife of a Yisrael. So here you're dealing with a couple. There is no Kohen element in this couple. She's a Bas Yisrael. She's married to a Yisrael. These are non-Kohanim people. And she was raped. Even though she's allowed to go back to her husband, psula lakuna. Eventually, if let's say her husband dies, this woman cannot marry a kohen. So that the term kohanos in the Mishnah is very misleading. You're telling us in the Mishnah that only women that are associated with the kohuna become unfit for truma, when you see from this teaching of Rav Sheshes, the psul truma applies across the boards to all married women that were engaged in some type of illegal intimacy. Eventually, even if they become single women or widows in the future, they nevertheless cannot marry kohanim. Omar Rava, Hochi Ko'omar. Thusly are we to understand the Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah that made reference to Kohanos, what was the intention of the Mishnah? Im hoyu Kohanois nesuos li Yisrael, if they were benois Kohanim, who were married to Yisraelim, a daughter of a Kohen that marries Yisrael, while she's married to the Yisrael, she cannot eat from Truma. She was brought up in the house of Kohanim. She was allowed as a single woman to eat Truma, but when she marries Yisrael, she can no longer eat Truma. So if you have the daughter, if in our, like the case in our Mishnah of the daughters of Kohanim, oh, we should mention one more point. In a standard situation of a Bas Kohen married to Yisrael, if he decides to divorce her one day, she goes back to her father's house, and she goes back to eating truma. It's in fact true, she as a divorcee cannot marry a Kohen, but she has a Torah permission to go back to her father's house and eat, continue and restart truma consumption as she was once when she was a single girl, assuming of course that she has no children from the Yisrael. However, this Bas Kohen that's married to Yisrael that was engaged in this illegal intimacy as a result of the wife switch around, Nifsalu min hatruma debei nashayu, they become unfit to eating from the truma in their father's house. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.